everybody. Welcome back to NBA Stories. We're back. My name is Nick Nasseby. I'm your host here. I'm joined, as always, by the Philly Bull himself, Mr. Mark D'Aquila. Mark, welcome back to the show. It's been a minute. How's it going, man?
It's doing good over here, man. I'm so glad to be back talking. NBA season's back around the corner, so I'm back on the mic. I had to pull this thing out of my closet with a little bit of dust on the microphone, which is never a good thing. I hope to never do it again. But me and Nick had some things going on in the past couple months, adjustments, new jobs for both of us, adjustments moving for Nick. And obviously it was the NBA offseason, so the timing kind of worked out. But we are back for you guys for another season of both NBA basketball and NBA stories.
Let's fucking go! Julius Randle, man. Sorry, I got the Knicks game on in the background. They just tied it back up with the Celtics. By the time this is out, we have either lost or beaten the Celtics. And it's going to be what kind of day I have tomorrow is going to be completely contingent on how this game goes. So this is going on in the background. I know the Sixers. Who do the Sixers have right now, Mark?
Pelicans. No Zion.
No Zion. Oh, he had surgery, right?
Yep, injured.
Oh, shit.
Injury-prone Zion.
Well, I mean, how long have I been talking about this, though? Like, we've talked about this, like, multiple times. I hate to say it. He's just too big. He got bigger, too. I don't know if you saw that. He got fucking bigger. He's up to 300 pounds, they're saying.
Yeah, he's going to – I mean, it's something we'll get into definitely in our season predictions. But as far as Zion goes, he's somebody that's going to have to, at some point, make adjustments in his – it's not necessarily style of play, it's style of life. And it's kind of sad to say, but I'm interested to hear what the TNT NBA crew has to say about it, because I feel like Charles and Shaq are going to have some words for Zion this season and how the adjustments he's going to have to make to stay on the court.
I also think he's only 21, right? So he was born in 2000.
Very young.
So it's also it's important, I think, to note that he's young and probably doesn't know how important it is to stay healthy in terms of his lifestyle,
you know. What's interesting too is it's not all that dissimilar from Joel Embiid and the way people talked about him in the national media a couple years ago. Injury prone, he was out of shape in the playoffs, and last year he proved that wasn't the case. He was able to stay healthy for the most part that season, and I think he kind of, I mean, there's still some concerns there with his health, but he shut some people up. So there's definitely a lot of time for Zion to prove that he is so young. And those conversations are going to be had, but you just have to make your own adjustments to your life to be able to stay on the court for his team. And also, New Orleans needs to make adjustments for him, because I can't imagine he's happy with what's going on there right now. And they're just not doing a very good job of putting pieces around him. I do love Willie Green,
though. It was an uphill battle from the moment they drafted him. You know, I remember thinking to myself when that lottery happened, first of all, I'm fucking livid that the Knicks got third. RJ's okay, but we'll see how this year pans out for him. But when it came to the Pelicans getting Zion, all I could think is, like, this is the biggest name to come out of the draft in quite some time. Very likely the biggest name to come out of the draft since LeBron himself. You know, maybe you could make a case for Blake Griffin, but I don't think so at this point. And you're going to put him in New Orleans. Not a bad town. Definitely not a market that is conducive for a name that big, though. So what they're going to have to do if they want to maintain a player of this caliber, they're going to have to make sure that the team is stout around him. It's the same thing that happened when they got Anthony Davis. It's just like they don't build around their stars well. And I think it has a lot to do with the ownership. I think it has a lot to do with the general managers. Probably top down is the problem more so than the personnel and the coaching. Willie Green, yeah, I could see him being a very good coach. You know, Rashad really vouches for him. He's a Detroit guy. Went to Detroit Mercy just like Rashad Phillips did. And so, you know, I always kind of listen to where he goes with it. But you can only coach so well with what you got. Look at Campbell on the Lions.
Yeah. The man, and he seems like a really good coach.
The man fucking loves what he does. And he loves his players. And it kills him to lose. But guess what he does every fucking week? He fucking loses because there's just not enough, you know, there's not enough personnel, and that's how it goes in any sport. I think as we go into the season, and we'll talk about this when we go through the predictions, I think that's going to be one of the storylines that should really be looked at in a little bit more detail. Zion, I think, is on a 5-year rookie. Is that right? 4-year?
Yeah, I think. Did he get that extension?
I'm not sure.
That rookie extension?
I'm not sure. I don't think he qualified yet. I think this is his qualifying year because all of the – because the like Luka got his and fucking Trey got his and all those guys. So I think maybe this year. I don't remember because I feel like it would have been pretty hefty, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's this year that he'll get it. I looked up the Zion Williamson contract, and the first story is, will Zion Williamson's next contract top Luka Doncic?
By the way, just because that's kind of how markets work, right?
Money always goes up.
I mean, you can't value yesterday's dollar with tomorrow's contract. It's not the same thing. But at the same time, like agents use prior – it's like using case law, right? Prior knowledge, this guy got this – this guy's more important to you, right? Don't you want to lock him down? Well, he's going to need this, you know. It's negotiation 101. I think, you know, well, but again, I think more so than the dollar amount is he going to want to fucking do it? Does he want to lock down the next 6 years of his life in New Orleans when there's not a lot going on in this town? And I genuinely, like last year, how high was I on the fucking Pelicans? I was excited to watch them. Stan Van, okay, that's an OG coach. This guy could probably succeed with a team of good pieces. Okay, let's see what kind of pieces he has. He has Zion, Eric Bledsoe, Lonzo, Steven Adams. You know, he had some people to go with. And Brandon Ingram, B.I., was like the guy there, you know. And there's just like J.J. There were so many different pieces to go with. And they still sucked. And I think Stan Van has something to do with that. I think, you know, he was deservedly fired at the end of the year. I don't think he fit with that scheme at all. But it's also something's go like they just hodgepodge a bunch of players together and said, hey, play together. Let's see how this works. Same reason why I'm not high on the Lakers this year, because you just throw a bunch of players together. It works in baseball. It works in baseball really well because you get a turn at bat. But in basketball, you got to share. And it doesn't, you know, it didn't work there. It hasn't worked in a lot of places where we've seen it. But I think a big storyline that I want to dive into before we get too tangenty for this show is going to be going right back to Philly. I mean, these are your boys, right? First and foremost, the first question I have for you, did you think that it was even going to get this far with Ben Simmons? Or did you think he was going to be gone by now?
I didn't think it would ever get this far. Now, the other question that a lot of Philly fans are getting right now is, were you willing to welcome him back? Did you get fooled by the fact that he came to practice and went through an entire day of practice with his cell phone in his pocket, half-assing it in cut-off sweatpants? Or were you still at that point willing to have him back the day before he gets kicked out of practice? And for me, no. I never was like, this is going to work. They can still win a championship with him. God, no. Embiid's comments last year in the postseason after they lost to the Hawks said all you needed to know. And I was shocked it got to this point. But at the same time, it's all because of Ben Simmons. It's the way he has handled it that has made him virtually untradeable. It's insane to look back and think at the offers the Sixers were likely fielding for Ben Simmons a year ago. When the James Harden sweepstakes took place, those deals, I bet you right now, if you went and talked to the Houston Rockets, they would rather have taken Ben Simmons than the deal they got. It was the Sixers unwilling to move him that caused their negotiations to go down the toilet, and the Nets became the top contender to land James Harden. So the problem right now is that Ben Simmons has made himself untradeable. You're talking about going from James Harden being a piece in return that they could have got for the three-time All-Star to now the conversation is led around Caris LeVert. Caris LeVert, the guy who was traded for James Harden, it makes no sense to me. And it's because Ben Simmons does this. And then he shows up to practice. And somehow, I didn't think it was possible for him to become less tradable than he was before he showed up to practice. He now gets kicked out, won't answer questions in the media afterwards because he was just kicked out of practice. The one chance he had to have a press conference and say something, just something, that maybe a team would be willing to trade him. It is extremely frustrating as a Philly fan. And, you know, the most frustrating part about it is that the national media kind of told us for a while now the frustrations with Ben Simmons' game. And it was a national story. Why won't he shoot? These are the flaws to his game. The national media was constantly talking about it. But what's getting misconstrued now is that people think that Philly fans are what caused this meltdown by Ben Simmons. Oh, Philly's a hard place to play in. It happened to Carson Wentz, too. It's happening to Ben Simmons. The reality of the situation, and you know this very well from talking to me and Mike over the years, is Philly defended everything when it came to Ben Simmons for years. And to just have it thrown back in the fan base's face the way it has over the past couple months is infuriating. And I don't think the national media gives Philadelphia enough credit for that, because it's going to become this story that Philadelphia ran him out of town, which you know is not the case. It's quite the opposite.
I just think he's weak. I think that's why that story happens, because he's pretty spineless, right? Like, that's why he hasn't gotten better. And I think there has to be an aura of, like, the rabid fandom of a Philadelphia sports fan. You know, it's not Philly's fault that he's like this, but I think that it has a lot to do with the fact that if you are playing bad in a town like Philadelphia, they're going to let you know it. If you're playing bad in L.A., they're like, oh, cool, we're still in L.A. Like, they don't give a shit, you know? That's why, like, if you're on a good team playing poorly, that's why it's like a perfect storm. You go to Minnesota and you play like shit, they're like, well, we suck anyway. So you can suck if you want to. Yep. You know, but if you're in Philly on a good Philly team playing badly, not just playing badly, but playing afraid, pure fear. I mean, that video, that clip of him passing the layup up will live in infamy for the rest of his life. No one will ever get rid of that video. That is an exact determining factor of who Ben Simmons is, unless he changes the way he plays or redeems himself.
I love that you bring up the word fear, because that really is what it comes down to, and why, to me, it was a relationship that there's no way it could have ever worked after watching what happened in the playoffs, because Philadelphia is a city where everyone says there is no better city in the country to be a star player in than Philadelphia. If you are a star, a true superstar, and you give all of your effort every game, Philadelphia will love you like no other. Go ask Allen Iverson, and Iverson's had the words to say that. Iverson never even won a championship. You could very easily say that he failed at his number one job in Philadelphia, which was to win a championship. He will be beloved in the city forever because he gave it 100% every single game in, game out. The guy mispractices. He has the famous practice speech about not showing up to practice, and yet he's still loved because of what the effort that he showed on the court. And no, he never won a championship. If Ben Simmons could just go out there and give the effort, that's all Philadelphia ever asked for. If he had missed that shot, no one would have cared. We would have cared, but it would not nearly be the story it became. It's because he's fearful, and that's why it can't work in this city anymore. It can't. He needs to go to a place like Fultz did. Go to Orlando, go to Sacramento. Those are the places where he can go put up all the numbers he wants. He'll never be an all-star again because they aren't going to give a bid to a Sacramento team that's 20 games under 500. He may make it to the playoffs once in his career if he's lucky, but that's what needs to happen with him. He can't possibly expect to play in these big moments when you are that fearful. I mean, look at what Trae Young, look at what Donovan Mitchell, look at what Ja Morant. These are all guys that are younger than Ben Simmons and were so unafraid and just willing to put up the shots in the playoff atmosphere. And those are cities that don't nearly care about their sports the same way that Philadelphia does. But those players go out there and they don't care. They're fearless.
I think the new story that just came out today is Ben Simmons says he'll do whatever it takes to get out of Philadelphia. I mean, this is what Harden did last year when he was in Houston. He didn't want to be there anymore.
There's a huge difference. There is a huge
difference.
Well,
I'm talking
though.
Behaviorally. I think it's pretty similar. It's the yes, reasons behind to that the point. Reasons are probably much different. I agree.
Yes.
You know, I think that Houston had there was a little bit. I'll let you go into that more, but I'm saying like behaviorally, they're just pouting until they get their way. That's what's happening.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the whole thing when Harden showed up all out of shape. Like that is where it is very similar. I agree with you. Now my issue is this is where it's unprecedented in NBA history, is because the closest examples are Harden gets brought up and what Anthony Davis did gets brought up. But those were guys trying to leave a team that was miserably bad. Superstars, which is exactly what we're talking about Zion possibly doing in a year or two. We've talked about Damian Lillard.
Wait, before you keep going, Houston wasn't miserably bad. They just couldn't get past the threshold. But keep going. Well, I know what you mean, though. And I think anybody listening would know what you mean, too. I just wanted
to. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was Harden failed over a course of, or not Harden, the Rockets failed over the course of several years. And then went into last year after Chris Paul left with a roster that wasn't capable of what Harden wanted. Yes, but what is so bizarre is the fact that you're seeing what many people would believe a star player in the league leave or demand trade from a team that was arguably one game away from winning the NBA Finals last year or the year before. Like a team that is a top contender in the East, and Ben Simmons was one of the biggest reasons why. That's why it's so puzzling to see this happen to a team that seemed like they were so close. And I just can't believe how frustrating it must be for Joel Embiid in that case too, to see a guy that he was going to bat for so long and said, this is all we need to win. I mean, you saw what happened with Jimmy Butler. He basically got moved in favor of Ben Simmons so that they could hang on to him because Butler wanted the ball in his hands more. It's such a unique situation because it is a top contending team, a team that is still projected to be one of the top seeds in the East this year. I just think that makes it even more bizarre. And the fact that all of James Harden, Anthony Davis, all these guys wanted to go from a team that was struggling or expected to struggle at that point to a contender. He seems like he wants to leave a contender and go play on a terrible team. I've never heard of that in my life.
I just think he wants. Unless I don't think he. I've said this since he fucking started playing. I don't think he likes basketball, dude. I don't think he likes it. I think he just wanted a way to get famous and rich, and like he had it built into the fact that he's 6'10" and graceful. I said it like when he got drafted. I know there's a guy.
You did always.
There's a guy
that.
At my job who is an LSU fan, and he's like, we don't talk about Ben Simmons because like he didn't give a shit. You know, he leaves a stank on anywhere he goes. I've noticed that. Like he leaves a stank on anywhere he goes, and I don't think he does it with like his behavior or by. I mean, yes, it is, but I mean, it's not like he's outwardly arrogant or obnoxious. It's that he just doesn't give a shit. I've never seen someone care less about a sport that's making them so much money, ever. I've never seen it before. You know, I think that there's probably cases of it out there, but who this man could have been, and the fact that he's only 25, and we're already saying like who he could have been instead of who he could be, is really a testament to the fact that he has absolutely no desire to get better. Period. Yeah. You know, I remember being in elementary school. And I didn't have to study to get A's, you know. And then I got to middle school. I still didn't have to study to get A's. Maybe throw a B or two in there. Wasn't that good at math. But then I got to high school. I started taking algebra and calculus and all that shit. I'm not good at that stuff. So what do? I fucking studied to get better, you know. But like I very likely could have not studied and been okay and average at certain aspects and good at the other things that I didn't have to work as hard at. That's what he is. He's the kid who's been so good for so long that he realizes now that he's going to have to work to get better, and he doesn't want to do it. And he finds out that the team around him is losing confidence in him because he's been put on this pedestal his entire life. And now he's
when you I brought up the point before on this podcast that if you go, I think I brought it up last year, if you go back and watch the Ben Simmons documentary, which I can't think was on Amazon, and it's all about his LSU days, and it's a precursor to everything that we're talking about right now. It really is scary to see. It's I brought up the point of passing up that last shot. It was something he did at LSU early in an early game when LSU was still nationally ranked in the country. They had expectations. He completely fell apart because he would not take the last shot in a game. I think you got a lot in that documentary about how his goal had nothing to do with basketball. It was simply get to the league, get paid. And that's exactly what he's doing right now.
I don't really think he cares about getting paid.
He likes the lifestyle, yeah, though.
He just doesn't give a shit. It's so strange, you know? Yeah. Like, it's so the only comparison that I can even try to make is maybe Shaq in his Lakers days, but, like, not even really, because Shaq was so – people think that he worked harder, but he really was just so goddamn dominant. Like, he's just so big, you don't have to do anything, you know? But yeah. He at least gave a shit about winning. So I don't know if there's an example that I can think of that compares to someone like Ben Simmons. I think very similar to what you're saying, it's going to require him getting dumped into a bad team, turmoiling for 4 or 5 years. The prime of his career is coming up really soon, and he is angling himself in a very poor way right now to really put himself in a shitty position for that prime. And then by the time he's done, no one's going to really want him. I mean, his contract right now is pretty ugly, to say the least. But here's the other thing about it, Mark, and I think it's important for someone who's outside of the fandom of Philadelphia to look at it this way too. You guys have had him since he was a rookie. You know, so you were a fan of Ben Simmons when there was expectations on Ben Simmons of who he should be, right?
Yeah.
Everyone else knows what he is now. So I don't agree with people saying that there's not going to be a pretty major market for Ben Simmons out there, because I think there is. I think that any team should want Ben Simmons right now. I think any team should go for him and utilize him the way that you know who he is, instead of trying to make him like the GOAT, because he's like, you know, he's not. And every year I think we go into it thinking maybe he'll get better. I mean, remember last year we were saying the same shit. Maybe he'll get better. Maybe he's better. Maybe he got the jump shot down. Look, he's in the lab shooting threes again. Like every fucking year he's doing that, right? And then the same shit happens. Mm-hmm. He plays like astounding defense. Astounding. Genuinely, like, he has to work hard at that defense. He is fucking phenomenal at it, right? I think he should be in the consideration this year should he get his shit together. Of being a DPOY. He should be in it. He should have been in it last year. But
He was a finalist.
I think any other team should look at him as being someone to seek if they're smart.
They should.
And I think they will.
Now the issue is but they aren't. And it's because a lot of times trade appeal comes to here's a guy. Here's something that we feel we can unlock in him to bring something else out of him. Or unless it's already an established guy that is a clear trade candidate, I want this piece. Like, think about a Kevin Porter Jr. last year. That was a guy who wasn't in the right spot. And a team like the Rockets is like, we're trying to get young. Here's a guy that we think we can unlock something in. They kind of have already. We see cases like that all the time. With Ben Simmons, at this point, it's got to feel like he is what he is, and there isn't anything we're going to unlock. In fact, he's a player with such massive character issues right now and zero will to play the game of basketball, no passion for the game of basketball. That's a hard pitch to make. He is great on the court in his specific areas, and any team would like to have those skills. But if he's not on the court for the Sixers right now, who's to say he doesn't do the same thing with your team? And that's the struggle I think a lot of these teams are having.
Here's the way I look at it as if I was a GM, right? He's not valuable right now because they're going to ask too much for him still, right? Mm-hmm. Give it a little bit of time when he's just not playing, and then you're going to get a Caris LeVert kind of trade bullshit. Right. I mean, like,
I tend to agree.
You know, I still think if the thing with Harden was – there was no leverage that the Rockets had with trades because everyone's like, he's not going to play for you anymore. He's not going to play for you anymore. You're lucky we're giving you anything for him. You could just pay him money to sit on the bench, or we could give you a couple of pieces here and get him out of your hair and start your rebuild. You know, I think and here's the other thing. I think when Simmons is gone, it's really like they're going to get someone out of this that's going to be sufficient to maintain the level there. We know Doc Rivers can win with limited talent. We saw him do it in LA multiple times, right? So once that happens, because I do believe it's going to happen soon here. I don't know how it can maintain, especially after giving him disciplinary action. He's pouting like a child about it. I want to do anything I can to get out of this city. Like, dude, the city, first of all, is giving you everything, including hundreds of millions of dollars. And second of all, you're trying to get out of a city to run away from your fears that are just going to follow you.
Yeah.
You're going to go to another city where you're going to be afraid to shoot threes from their fucking court. Like, what does it matter where you go? You know, it just because, and it's like, what taught me that it doesn't matter is that he was doing this shit in the bubble. There's no one there. No one's fucking watching you. Like, there's no fans in the stands here. So what, there's no doubt that, it's like, so what the fuck does it matter? You're just afraid.
You know what else about this whole situation is unprecedented? There's so many things about it that are, but let's not forget, this is a guy who just signed about a year ago a 5-year, $170 million extension. So that is unheard of, to get a contract extension like that and seek a trade within a calendar year. It's unheard of. And I think to let alone ask for a trade, but to not show up to work after getting that extension is mind-blowing. And I think that's adding a unique wrinkle to whatever kind of trade value he has right now, too, is the contract situation. If you're looking at that contract and he won't play for that contract, how are you trying to attract that guy to your city? I don't know. I think you're right that, like, a Caris LeVert type deal, I also still think that the Sacramento Kings could be a player. That seems
it's going to be a three-team trade because his agent's going to shoot down any attempt they send to try to send him to Sacramento. This is the same trade we talked about with Harden, by the way. We were like, oh, let's give him Hield and, you know, fucking whoever else they have, right? Maybe De'Aaron Fox, throw that in the mix. Like, they're, first of all, De'Aaron probably, unless he's vehemently loyal, probably wants out of Sacramento. In his heart of hearts, he knows that he is in a shitty town on a shitty team.
Wouldn't that be perfect for Ben, though, Sacramento? It's different than a Harden situation.
I agree. I also think that he is going – I mean, these lawyers, these agents are all lawyers, right? So they're going to figure a way to make sure that he doesn't get traded to Sacramento. Nobody wants to get traded to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Like, they have the pieces, and they very well have enough to send to – Philadelphia, but what I think is actually going to happen is they're going to make a three-team trade where someone gets shipped to Sacramento for like pieces and picks and shit, and Simmons goes somewhere with like a bigger name. You know, I don't agree with it. It's just how it works. NBA players get to pout and bitch and get away with it. It's always been like that. You know, they haven't utilized that until recently, but it's always been that way. They're too big of names. The story's going to end. Well, by the next week, we'll have an answer. You know what I mean?
I really hope so. It's like day to day over here.
Well, let's talk about attitude adjustments too, because like, look at Kyrie.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyrie right now is teetering in a position that's difficult for us to even talk about because it's so fucking polarizing. Right? I mean, we can't just go in and talk about vaccinated, unvaccinated stuff because everybody's got their stance on it. Here's my take on it, and I'll fucking die on this hill. If a corporation tells you to get vaccinated and you choose not to, get fired. I don't really care. That's your choice, you know? But the issue that I run into is, like, I don't know if, like, fucking cities and states should be telling people to. That seems a little bit too much for me. I think if your business tells you to get vaccinated or else don't work here, then that's completely their right. You know, I don't know, but that's my take. I don't even want to go into it that much because I know it's like just so fucking polarizing. But the only issue I have with this is that Kyrie has done this shit like 1,000 times.
Yeah,
it's just fucking, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. His family's like, oh, he wants to retire. Oh, you know, he didn't want to. He doesn't like this. He wants to. He doesn't like this being forced on him. He's gonna stop playing. He's never gonna play in Brooklyn again. It's like, I was talking about this with Paz. I don't know if you ever talked to Paz. I think you have been on with Ben before.
Yeah,
but
I believe.
Think
so.
About it this way: when we were talking about it, just the thought popped in my head. If Kyrie Irving were to retire today, right now, would you give a shit?
No.
I don't care at all,
and I don't think the league would at this
like,
point.
I think to myself, he was never a star to a level where people would be sad if he was gone.
No, and don't you now, like, when you think of the Brooklyn Nets, it really is crazy. I mean, it was the same way when he was on the Celtics. There was a time on the Celtics where you like forgot that Kyrie even existed, and it was just Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown's team. And then every once in a while, they would like pan over to the bench and you just see him sitting there. You're like, what the
fuck?
Oh,
Kyrie's here.
That's how I feel about the Nets now. It's like James Harden and Durant. And honestly, I used to, when that Harden deal was made, I remember feeling like, damn, fuck this league, man. This happened again. Like, this is an unfair team. Now it's like, oh, they got Harden and Durant, and they're equal, if not worse to me than any other big three we have in the league or great team. The Bucks are clearly a better team than the Nets. And it's like, you at this point, I've just erased Kyrie Irving from my
mind
that he even exists in the league.
The Nets took a risk, right? It's never been a problem.
Yeah.
Big threes have never been an issue of talent. It's always been an issue of attitude. Why did the Miami big three work out? Because they were all willing to sacrifice their ego for the sake of the team. And they realized that the team was making a huge sacrifice getting all three of them on the team because they're not going to be able to pay other people to be around them in as much of a frequency, right? That's exactly what happened in Brooklyn. The reason why I knew it wasn't going to work out that well, and the reason why, I mean, think about this. When Miami started their big three, everybody was like, oh shit, Miami's about to fucking win the championship like 3 straight years. Immediately, everybody thought that. Not one person who I talked to thought that the Nets were even going to win one finals. People were like, yeah, they'll figure out a way to lose. And it's like, this is a team with three of the best scorers in the league. And everybody's just saying, they're really good, yeah, but, you know, can they stay on the court together? How are they going to play together? What do they do when they're on the court together? And it wasn't as magnanimous or as obvious and in your face as it might have been, but this is exactly what's happening. They get hurt. There's an ego issue. And then all of a sudden the team's starting to go by the wayside. And now we look at the rest of the roster and we're like, oh shit, they actually gutted this team. I mean, they still have talent, you know, but they got rid of the guys who could have made them very good for a long time. They've got rid of Dinwiddie. They got rid of Karis, you know. They got rid of Jared Allen. I mean, fucking Jared Allen. That guy could have done a lot of damage on that team. They got rid of all of them to make cap room for three guys who all signs pointed to not possible. Not possible. I think it was one of the best things that could have happened. They get along with each other, but they don't get along with, like, society. I think watching a big three fail is the best thing that could have happened to the league. Because now we see the cracks in the logic. And the stars can see the cracks in the logic.
Dude, I think one of the best things that ever happened to the league, and this will transition us nicely into the main protein of this episode, which is our predictions. But one of the best things to ever happen to the NBA in my lifetime was this Bucks team winning the NBA Finals. I really believe that. I think it is so good for basketball and the future of a lot of these stars to see somebody like Giannis stay with the team that drafted him and build a roster that plays as a team the way that they do. And, you know, have two co-stars. They have a big three, but it's not the big three where we've come accustomed to in today's day and age. It's a big three of guys that just do their job and fit perfectly together. I was so happy watching them win the NBA Finals last year. And I just think, and even watching the Nets game last night, the way that Bucks team plays, they're so likable and just a big three that fits so well together. I think we're going to see a lot of teams now moving forward build similarly to that. Like, look at a place like Memphis. It's not a town all that different than Milwaukee. They can now build around a star in Ja Morant and not feel like they can't attract the star free agent because they aren't New York, Philadelphia, LA. They can go out there and say, hey, maybe we get our version of Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. We can get somebody like that in Memphis. Like, players like that, I just think, are going to have a different outlook now, and organizations are going to feel like they can win in a market like that.
And I think that's what the NBA's always wanted.
Yes, definitely.
Giannis is the best thing that's probably happened to the league in a long time, because it's
for
like
sure.
A vehemently loyal guy to a shitty town. I don't know if you've been in Milwaukee. It sucks. Sorry, Milwaukee. It sucks.
You sound like Stephen A. Remember all
it
that?
It sucks. Like, the town, it's not a great town, you know? And it's like, I don't know. There's so many better places to play, right? I mean, who wouldn't want to play Miami? Who wouldn't want to live in LA, be the biggest name in that city? New York. I mean, those are crazy cool places to live and play basketball. Chicago, right down the fucking street from Milwaukee, you know, that's a cooler place to play. Being Jordanstown, you know. But he doesn't care about that stuff. I mean, think about the upbringing and the roots of this kid. He was not a blue chip by any means. He was a skinny Greek kid who walked 5 miles one way to the gym to play basketball, shared shoes with his brothers so that they could play and get better. Eventually, obviously, got to a professional Greek team, so it's not like he did that until he got drafted. But, you know, that when he was a kid, that's what he was doing.
Real quick, too, I was watching the game last night, and I've heard this during the offseason. How about Thanasis, too? That's a guy that I've heard he's going to be getting a lot more minutes.
He did last night. He was playing last night.
Hell yeah. What? How perfect is that? That you literally have a relative of arguably one of the most irreplaceable players in the league that can come in, and I'm not saying he's going to do what Giannis did, but you can have Thanasis now come in, and I think he's working on being a defensive specialist right now. And at least it's not as big of a blow when he comes off the court for a little, whoever Giannis was guarding. I just think that guy is somebody who could make a serious impact this year. I believe
it. I mean,
they're
absolute athletes, all of them. I think Kostas is probably, you know, I mean, I think he's
the worst of them. There's another one, too.
Alex, he was supposedly, they said he was going to be better than his brother, but I think he's at UW Milwaukee right now. He's all right. He's not the best, not the worst. You know, we'll see what happens. He's young, you know, so we'll see where it goes. But it's just a crazy, crazy mentality or crazy situation that we have, like, one guy building his family's legend by himself, just a skinny kid, Greek kid. I remember watching him year one, and, you know, I don't like to say when I called stuff because I don't like call it, but I was talking to my friends. I remember when he got drafted, it was my first year down in Florida, and I was showing my friends. I was like, this skinny kid, he just got drafted, like, second year in. I'm like, if that kid bulks up, he's gonna be fucking sick. Like, he's so fucking athletic. If he bulks up, he's gonna be sick. And he got taller, and that, like, not only did he get bigger, he got taller. So there's just not a lot you can do about Giannis. And that's, you know, the beautiful thing about him and why he's so important to the league. I thought it would have been the same story with Luka in Dallas, because, I mean, Dallas is a nice town, but it's definitely not the biggest, and it's definitely not the, you know, the most storied franchise ever. They have a championship, and they have a history of European players, but Luka's a bitch. he's like a bitch. I don't think Luka is a good role model, if I'm going to be completely candid. I think he's just a punk, dude.
He is very much the opposite of what we have in Giannis. They're very, very opposite figures in that way. And I think it's actually great for the NBA. I think Luka is very quietly going to take on that villain role in the league. He's going to be that villain that we haven't seen in the league for a long time. And it's going to be weird because we're so used to Dallas being known as Dirk Nowitzki, the nicest, most like respected and well-loved guy across the league, led that team for so long. But I think you're right. Luka is gonna is going.
I think
to
it's hard, but be, just to your point though, I think it's hard to be a villain on a four seed.
Yeah, that's fair. But you don't think he'll have his moments there where you kind of like he's still gonna have those villain playoff moments.
I think it's I think the big thing for
like
Luka
an Isaiah Thomas
like,
maybe
he's just a shithead to like refs and stuff. Yeah. He's a baby. He's you know he needs to grow up. That's the issue with those guys, right? Giannis is from a humble beginning. Luka is a blue chip guy. Luka has been coddled since he was 13. You know, he has been in Real Madrid when he was 15 years old. Like that's different. He came up differently. They got to the same place, you know. And Luka, don't get me wrong, is fucking phenomenal and he's a great basketball player and he's probably going to win at least one MVP by the time he's done. If he stays healthy, he is a surefire Hall of Famer at this trajectory. I just think that his attitude's annoying. You know, there's some guys who are just annoying, their attitudes. And it's funny to think about it too, because if we go back into the, like the 70s and the 80s and see these Hall of Fame players that we don't know anything except their numbers and their, you know, their playing style, we don't really know what kind of attitude they had, because there's not as much exposure to the NBA as there is now. We know exactly who these people are these days, you know. But I mean, that's all well and good. I think we should go into our predictions for this upcoming season. We got a lot of curveballs possible here. I mean, this is as up in the air as it gets. It's been, you know, the last few years, I guess, besides the Jokic MVP last year. The MVP award has been pretty callable before the season started. Giannis was on the cusp before he won his first one, and it was just kind of like, yeah, he's going to get it. And then the second time, it's like, well, there's nobody else really who can take it from him, so he's going to get it again. Before that, it was Harden. He's been so close so long. He's got to get one, right? And then he got it. And then before that, Russell – so close to getting a triple double. He's gonna fucking do it one of these years, and then he does it, and he gets a, you know. So it's like there's always been a little bit of a call beforehand. This year I don't fucking know, dude. It's a guess.
It really is. I think that story that you're telling is, in a way, the Luka. He's the favorite, and I think like a lot of people are just kind of expecting it. It's coming soon. You know what I mean? Like, regardless of how we feel about him, like, I think we all know he's winning an MVP at some point in his career, and he's approaching his prime. He's still so young where it's going to happen. I know also in that same breath, a lot of people are taking flyers on Luka is the betting favorite, but a guy from his draft class and one of the most polarizing players in the league right now, Trae Young at plus 2100. I know that Rashad would like that one, and I've seen some people saying to sprinkle that in. I still think it's a little early for him. I don't see them giving him MVP nods yet when you have a lot of these guys that are in their prime and a little bit older with years under their belt that they're just waiting to give MVPs to. I think you would agree with me when you look at like a lot of these betting favorites after Luka Doncic. There are a lot of players that are just they're waiting to give their MVP to, like a Joel Embiid, like a Damian Lillard, for example. I think those are two guys that if they put up the numbers this year and they can finish in the top four seeds in their conference, which is not a guarantee, those are definitely names they would like to give an MVP to. As well as Kevin Durant is due for one here soon.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all see the players that we think could and should win them. But again, I think the storyline, unless the storyline gets ripped by injuries, the storyline usually stays pretty stalwart. I think Luka would have won it last year if he had played every game. I think Luka would have easily taken it if they didn't fall off in the middle of the season. I called him to win it last year. You know, I hesitate to say it again, but I do think that this is his year to win it. You know, it's going to be a back-to-back Luka call for me. Last year I was wrong. This year I don't know if I would be. But I'll be, you know, I'll be completely frank with you. I truly think the way, and I think that our mistake last year when the season started was that we took a bunch of flyers on the initial week of action, right? There was like 1 week of play and we're like, oh, this is going to be what's happening. The Mavericks sucked for a little bit of time. Oh, the Knicks are going to get their pick. This is going to be great, right? Didn't fucking happen. They both went to the playoffs. I think that it's important for us to look forward and maintain that mindset throughout the season. For that reason, I think that Giannis can take another one this year. I think that he should take another one this year. I think that the eyes should be on him more so than they were last year. Last year, we didn't look at Giannis because he had already won two in a row. Winning three in a row just doesn't happen. You have to be so fucking good. The MVP repeat is also an MIP. It has to be, especially if it's a triple. You know, it's only happened a couple times. So if you're going to put Giannis in a three-peat conversation, you have to look at who else has gone three-peats, right? Jordan, fucking Kareem, you know, biggest names in the world. I think Wilt got one once. It's hard to do that. So you have to look at that, you know. But I don't see who is more valuable to their team than Giannis. The name most valuable player is sort of still annoying to me because it doesn't mean that. It means most outstanding player, and I think they should change the name to that because that's what the award is. It's always been that. That's why a 6-seed fucking Russell Westbrook gets it because he averaged a triple-double. That shouldn't have won MVP for that. You know, I guess it now we say that because he's done it five times, but you know, back then it was pretty crazy. So I you know, it's for me, I want to say that Giannis deserves it, or he will by the end of the year. I think he'll do enough to deserve it. I think there's so much more firepower on that team that they might be so good that people don't care. I think that's going to be what happens. You know, if the Mavericks are good this year, the Mavericks are top five. It's going to be directly as a result of Luka, because Porzingis is not who we thought anymore. He's just not the same guy. And who the fuck else is on that team? Seriously. Like, who the fuck else is on the Mavericks? Name one decent fucking contributing scorer on the Mavericks.
Yeah, no, they're Hardaway? Terrible. I've questioned their decisions for a while now. All right, so I'll give you mine real quick before we move on to the next award. There's two guys that I'm floating with. I mentioned there are long shots betting that I think would be more worth it if you were actually placing a wager on it, which are like, I even think a guy like a Jason Tatum I could see having a breakout year. But like you said, it's the sometimes people try and get like sexy with the NBA MVP, and it's just not one of those awards where you can do it. They're not. It's rare that it's a guy that is like deep down the list when you look at the favorites to begin the year. And that's why the two guys I'm toying with are Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. And I think that Steph Curry is really interesting this year because we all forget the way that season ended last year, the run that he went on, where he was nowhere near the MVP consideration until he went on a historic run, I think he finished averaging over 30 points, was it last year? And somehow didn't get the MVP. Now he would fall into that rare breed, just like Giannis, if they win this year, getting their third MVP. But Curry hasn't won since his back-to-back 2015-2016. I think with Klay coming back, and they're clearly going to be a better team this year than they have been of late, I think Curry's going to have a real shot at it, barring the fact that he stays healthy. And then real quick, I think Curry is the guy that I'm going to go with. But just touching real quick on Kevin Durant, watching last night's game and the playoffs last year, I think it's become very evident that it is so far and away his team as opposed to James Harden. And we've kind of seen, I think more so than I expected, we've seen Harden take a back seat sort of to Durant on this team. I actually expected Durant's numbers to go down a little bit more than they have with the addition of James Harden. It just hasn't happened. it's been Harden who's taken that back seat that I didn't expect, become more of a facilitator, and shown how great of a passer he is. And I think that just feeds into, if the Nets can somehow become the one seed this year, Durant is going to be the one getting a lot of that credit. He's a scoring machine. I think he's going to outscore James Harden by a good 5 to 7 points this year on average. It might just be enough to get him the MVP. So he would be my second pick after Steph Curry.
The Olympics really showed us just how much better than the average star Kevin Durant still is. You know, I mean, the team, I know that it's an Olympics, it's not the same, but like the team went where he took them. Like Damian Lillard was an afterthought. He played like shit, but you know what I mean? Like, was like they went where KD took them, because that's where, you know, that's what he allowed them to do, because he's that kind of fucking talent. Yeah, I agree. I think that Steph is going to get some looks. He got some looks last year. We'll talk more about that team, because I think that there's another part that we should probably bring them up with. Next up here, after the most valuable player predictions, we have our rookie of the year predictions. And there's a pretty heavy favorite right now. I don't think he's heavy favorite. He's about a plus 210 comparative to plus 310 for the next guy. But they have Jalen Green going number one for rookie of the year. I'm not sure I agree with it, though. I liked what I've seen out of Cade in the preseason. I've liked what I've seen out of him in all of the training camp footage that I've seen. I think their first game is right now, or it was earlier. And, you know, if I wasn't watching this Knicks game, I'd probably be on it right now, because I'm curious to see.
He's out.
Is he?
Yeah, he's out to start the season. I mean, he's fine, but he's not playing tonight. But Jalen Green and Suggs both are.
Okay. I don't think Suggs – I think by the end of the season, Suggs will be in the conversation, but I think it's really going to be a two-man race. Unless I'm wrong about Cade. I very well might be, you know. I don't see how his style of game doesn't transition so easily to the league. Jalen does. I mean, just that video of Jalen just, like, jumping to get that fucking ball that was getting thrown out of bounds. Just that by itself. I don't know if you saw that video. It was like, holy shit. Where the fuck did the guy was going to the rafters? But he'll be just fine. He'll be just fine. He's going to be a great fucking player. I just think that, you know, when Cade gets back into the flow of things, it's going to be a surprise to everybody, because they're going to remind themselves that they're watching the Detroit Pistons play basketball because of him.
I think you got it pegged for the two guys it's going to be between. And it's like you have the sexy pick versus like Cade Cunningham is going to be a very by-the-book guy from what it seems. Like, it might not be the flashiest basketball you've ever watched, but you're going to look at the box score every night and be like, all right, he got the job done.
Jalen Green also. 16 and 7, right? And six boards. What are you going to say about it?
For sure. Jalen Green, too, is the one that's marketing himself a little bit more right now. He's got, like, the Instagram following. He's always dressing up, like, before the games. Like, he's going to be a very loud personality in the sport. I really believe that. I think he's going to be a big name. Which is kind of what is going to make it go unnoticed, what Cade Cunningham's doing. If this Rookie of the Year race is as good as I think it's going to be between the two of them, it's going to be a guy that is a lot quieter and under the radar in Cade Cunningham, which is weird to see from a first overall pick, as opposed to Jalen Green, who comes with a lot of this attraction and sort of like a media circus around him. I think that Cade Cunningham will get it done. I think it's almost a similar race to what we saw with Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell, which, if you remember, really came down to the wire. I think Donovan Mitchell is more of the guy that Jalen Green is, who's going to be putting up serious scoring numbers, as opposed to Cade Cunningham playing a unbelievably strong box sheet filling all around game. And I think that's what'll give Cade the edge. Real quick, I do want to hear your opinion on one guy whose name I've heard a lot about lately, and that's Josh Giddey. out in Oklahoma City. What do you know about him, and do you think he's a guy that could really, really put up some serious numbers this year?
The white boy.
Yeah, you remember him, right?
Oh, I didn't know his fucking name. I just saw his fucking tape. Yeah, I like him. He moves well, dude. He moves well. I was watching some of his tape, and I was impressed. I just didn't know who the fuck he was, dude. He looked like a guy. He is the least basketball looking guy I've fucking seen in a while, I'll tell you.
Yep. He was the pick in the draft that I think a lot of people were taken back by. That was like the surprise how early he went. And I think it was in the preseason he went off. He's been looking really good.
Yeah, he averaged 13-7-5 in the preseason. He'll probably be like a second team all rookie. I think that a guy like that requires a lack of attention. Get a good defender on him. Watch what happens, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's the big thing with it is like once you start to see high level defensive looks as opposed to preseason looks from other rookies or summer league looks from guys trying to make the team, you can be better than them. That's fine. Kevin Knox looked fucking good in Las Vegas, right? Kevin Knox looked good in preseason too when they gave him the opportunity to do it. But when he got to the season, it was like, oh, shit, now I'm getting attention, and it just shut him the fuck down. That's the story. That's what's going to be the difference, you know. I think you'd like to see another Australian perform well.
Yeah.
So
one that doesn't end in turmoil.
Yeah, you know, like Angles. I guess he's like the top Australian now. Everyone's favorite Australian.
Patty Mills, baby.
Patty Mills.
Patty Mills.
I love how he didn't even – how Ben Simmons didn't even play for the fucking Olympic team.
That started the offseason of frustration, man. It's not like you needed any practice or anything or put in any work like your teammate Matisse Thybulle did going all out and literally starting for Team Australia.
Fucking love Thybulle, though. So
I love him.
Next up, most improved – there's a lot of the lines on most improved are interesting right now because I think the number one is MPJ. Number two is KPJ. And then there, it goes like most improved. Let me just like look at these lines here. 22. So, number one's Ja. A lot of people are saying Ja. I don't like the Ja pick, if I'm being honest. I don't think Ja is a good pick for that. I think that there's a couple guys who the most improved has clearly turned into like a breakout star award. Like who's next up? You know, Ingram is now like a stalwart. Julius Randle is obviously a stalwart. I'm fairly sure Sabonis won it too, right? Like, look at him now,
so.
You know, like all these guys who won it and now they're like stars. I think that there's some guys who did too well last year to really get that award.
Yeah.
I think number one on that list that I'm thinking is Ja. He performed too well. Number two is Zion. I don't know why people are putting Zion on MIP. He averaged, 26 a game last year? Some crazy shit. Why is he? How is that most improved? What does he have to do? Average 30 points a game this year? I don't think he's got that in his tank. Number three, and this one might come as a shock to anybody, just because he kind of did it on the low. Michael Porter Jr. averaged 19 a game last year, playing every game except 10. I don't think that he wins the most improved player unless he's a 25 a game guy, which he very well might be. In which case, I will tell you, be the first to tell you, you should win that shit.
In the same breath, the guy that I love this year as a breakout, but I question, just like you, is he already too big of a name? Is SGA? SGA, I think, he hasn't been an all-star yet, has he?
No, he has not.
I don't believe so. So, like, maybe he has a case because he hasn't been an all-star, but I don't think John Morant has either. He wasn't an all-star his first 2 years. So I don't know, like, if he's going to get the recognition for an award like this. The previous winners that we've seen were Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, Siakam, Oladipo, Giannis. These were all, like, right before the breakout. So I don't really see anyone there that it was, like, they were already pretty good beforehand. The other name I see on here a lot is Christian Wood because he got screwed last year. That's just a terrible pick, in my opinion. He's not somebody – if anything, he's a guy that takes a step back this year. I don't see, like, his numbers suddenly popping off more than they did last year. If he was going to win the award, it was going to be last year. Honestly, I think my favorite picks on the board are SGA, if he gets that recognition – for the award, and then the smaller name that would be more of a breakout is a guy I talk about all the time, Kevin Porter Jr. I think he's a guy that could really shine this year, but it's just an issue of Jalen Green coming in right now is going to take the ball out of his hands a little bit, take away some of that scoring, that flashy scoring. But I think Michael Porter, this is the year that he could – or sorry, Kevin Porter put up serious numbers before Jalen Green really takes that next step as an elite player. Porter's going to be the leading scorer on that team, I think.
What about LaMelo being a plus 4,000? I think that's a great fucking take. Someone wants to fucking
it's not
if
bad.
You want to slam that home. LaMelo Ball is the guy who I thought about when I thought most improved. He's what, 16-7 last year? I mean, if he doesn't even have to score more. If he just goes to like 16, 17 and like 10.
Well, how about, Nick, how about tonight, 31-9-7 as the Hornets beat the Pacers 123-122 and come back from down 25.
God, I can't wait to watch that. I can't wait to fucking watch that. Those highlights are going to be off the chain. I'm telling you, like, I was like, dude, this kid's fucking great. He last year we didn't see everything because he was hurt. How's he a plus 4,000? That's fucking crazy. That line's going to shift immediately, so sorry for anybody. It's definitely not that now by the time you're listening to this. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of crazy names that are pretty far down this list that I think once you get past the plus 5,000, it's just guys who are older, who it doesn't really make sense why they would be on this anymore. The only one that could possibly make any sense to me, what I'm seeing, Mitch Robbie's is a plus 6,000. I'm watching him play right now. He's a fucking star, in my opinion, but I'm biased. I love Mitch Rob, but he's gonna be a 10-10 guy, probably maybe 15-10. Probably he's gonna get a block. Oh, I just saw him swat the shit out of who is that? Schroeder? Fuck you, Schroeder. Fucking loser. No, it's Marcus Smart, even better. Get out, boy. But yeah, so I mean there's a lot of options here with that one. And then last up, we have Depoy. This one should be fun. I think it's the year that Anthony Davis gets his due. I think he's already got one, right?
I don't know. I think he got one in New Orleans. He definitely got one with the Lakers.
I think this is his year for it. I think that he was definitely overlooked last year for it. It's still – obviously the favorites still Gobert as it is every year. And then Ben Simmons is a plus 500 still. That's probably going to drop. And then Anthony Davis also a plus 500. Giannis is plus 8. Not a lot of like surprising names on this list. I think the only one that I see that is a little bit of a curveball early on is Matisse, but that's not even really a curveball too much because we all know what he can do. I didn't know he was going to be, you know, looking this high yet. It's quite hurt.
Yeah, I don't think he's starting the year. No. I think he might be halfway through the season. He's coming back. I think he might be out serious time. Oh. Yeah, he's still – that. I think it was because he tore his ACL and didn't get surgery until the playoffs.
All right.
So, yeah, that's going to be a major setback.
Yeah, so, I mean, Depoy, if I'm going to take somebody, I'm taking AD. Who do you think?
I think I obviously love Thibel. I think if assuming Simmons is gone and he's in that starting role getting minutes, but the problem is tonight, they did not start him. So I question if he'll get the minutes to get it done. I don't think he will. If he starts, it's only going to be a fraction of their games. They're going to run with the Danny Green maxi lineup for the most part. I'll take a flyer on Bam Adebayo. I think he's a guy that is stayed relatively healthy throughout his career, and I really like the Heat to have a great year. I think people are sleeping on the Heat, who didn't put it all together last year. Really, they took a step back, and I think you can expect that after exceeding so many expectations in Jimmy's first year there. In the bubble last year, they took a major step back. This is going to be a step forward year. Could be led by Bam Adebayo, and even Jimmy Butler is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. He, as he's developed his offensive game, we've forgotten about his defensive ability. He's going to be guarding the number one on just about any team they play. So I think either of those guys on the Heat could be a serious contender. But it's hard to bet against Gobert, man. He's won three of the last four.
I think so. The most recent, we have Jimmy Butler as a plus 5,500, Bam as a plus 1,400. I think another one to look at pretty closely is Clint Capella, plus 4,050. You know, there's some good ones on this. Defensive Player of the Year is kind of tough though, because that really doesn't change. It's only like that's the only award that people win four times. It's not even that big of a deal. I mean, it is. You know what I mean? But it's like, you, no one wins MVP four times. You obviously don't win MIP multiple times. Can't win Rookie of the Year multiple times. And so Depoy is the only one that it's like the same motherfuckers every year, kind of in the same running. You know, I mean, this is the same people. Gobert, Simmons, Davis, Embiid, Antetokounmpo, Miles Turner, Adebayo, Drew Holiday, Draymond. That was what we were talking about last year. It's the same shit, you know.
Yep.
And so I think next week we should go more into what we're looking like after the first week of games, what we're looking at in terms of playoff predictions, just because we've also been running pretty heavy here, pretty long. But I want to talk about one sleeper team for each of us. And we might have the same one, so I apologize. Actually, I'll let you go first. Who out of the teams that, you know, we're looking at right now, who's your sleeper? And if I have the same one as you, I'm just going to talk about them too.
Sleeper as in to go to the finals or to make the
playoffs? I would say sleeper to do damage in the playoffs.
Okay, damage in the – because I there are some bottom dwellers that we'll talk about more next week. We can kind of go into our season outlook and maybe do win totals. But there's some bottom dwellers that I think are going to surprise some people and win some games, but they're not anywhere near contenders. For me, that team that I think is going to contend and make some serious noise in the playoffs this year is the Heat. I'm going to go with that Heat pick that I touched on earlier. It might not be that hot of a take, but I think to do damage in the playoffs is serious. They could be an upset candidate for a team like the Nets. We just didn't see them put it all together last year, and I think a guy like Tyler Hero, who I trashed on so much last season, could really make some noise and get back to the level that we expected. Just when you get down on a guy like a Tyler Hero is when he shows I'm really not all that bad. I think we didn't even go over the Sixth Man of the Year award, but I think he's a guy that could be towards the top of the list for that. They added PJ Tucker, let's not forget, too, from the championship Bucks team. That's a very, very underrated move. And, of course, Kyle Lowry as well. Kyle Lowry adds a big three element that they didn't have even when they went to the NBA Finals. And Markieff Morris, another veteran. I think they had a very good offseason. And I expect them to fully return to the Miami Heat team we saw 2 years ago and challenge for at least the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I like the Heat. I think that, you know, they're consistently underrated. The coaching and tutelage of Spoelstra can never really be understated there. He is a top five, top three coach in the league year in and year out. He takes bad teams and makes them look better. You know, so that's always major. What about, this is mine, what about the Grizzlies, man? The fucking Grizzlies.
I like that a lot.
I like the Grizzlies this year. I think it was a pretty big loss for Grayson Allen going to the Bucks. If they kept Grayson, I think that would have been a pretty, you know, stout seven-man, eight-man rotation right there.
But what I'm thinking about here is they have one of the hardest working big men in Steven Adams, who, by the way, is still only 28. You know, so he's got a while. It's fucking crazy to think he's 28 years old, isn't it? Feels like he's been in the league for like 30 years. But he's only, you know, he's only 28. So there's a lot that can be done with him. You know, Dylan Brooks is going to rise. Brandon Clark already is on the rise. Triple J is healthy, finally coming back. Only had 8 points tonight, so, you know, not the best start, but we'll, you know, he'll get it back together. Ja, obviously. And then Zaire Williams, dude. They got Zaire. Yeah. I mean, the rookie boy coming out of Stanford. I think that was a great pick by them. I think it was an underrated pick by them. That's a guy who was looking top six earlier in the college season last year. So that's something to pay attention to. Kyle Anderson, also, by the way, only 28. That fucking weird, dude. That guy looks. I feel like Kyle Anderson's been in the league since I was 17. You know.
Yeah, he's been around for a while, and he's a local kid, and for me at
he's
least,
a Jersey boy.
He's up Jersey. Yeah, he was. He actually, the town my girlfriend's from is where he went to school, and he was like a spectacle around there, which is weird to think about, like the slowest man in the history of the NBA being a high school spectacle. Now he's like one of the most boring to watch players in the league, even though he is a very good player.
I know, I feel like we've talked about it a few times. It's just funny to me to think that the man is so slow that he fakes dudes out by being slow. But they're like, there's no way he's that slow. And it's like, yeah, no, he is actually that slow. And then they just get crossed up. You know, I think you're very right in saying Ja is going to have a big, big year this year. It only makes sense, you know, at this point, just the way that he's projecting, the way that he is ascending. 26 tonight against Cleveland, 13 for 21, you know, five dimes as well. So I think that that's going to be like more signs to come. But yeah, I mean, this year is going to be an interesting one, to say the least. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of storylines. It's just not a – we'll be here for fucking 5 hours. I'm running out of words here, you know. So I think – I don't know. What are some last takes you have regarding the season this year?
I will say this – I'll preview next week because I want to do a deep dive into one team. They won their game tonight by 6 points. They covered a 5.5-point spread. I sent out my pick earlier on the Twitter account at NBA Stories. And just as a heads up to all the listeners, if throughout this season we did the live tweet lineups last week, but I'm going to try to, as often as I can, get out a couple of games that I like betting wise with the line, the point spread, and what we like. And Nick will try and get some picks out there as well of what he likes on a night to night basis, just if we ever see something that sticks out to us, just what we're liking. Obviously, this is a big time sports betting world, so I'll try and delve into that a little bit this year with the game lines when we send out the live tweet lineups. But anyways, I sent out earlier today Bulls -5.5 against the Pacers, was it?
Sorry. Hornets Pacers.
No, the Pistons, yeah. Sorry. Pistons. They covered it by 6. The Bulls are a very interesting team this year. And obviously, we know about the offseason splashes. They made more than anybody. They're, I think, everyone's sexy pick this year to be a Eastern Conference playoff team, maybe. Last year, we had a podcast where we got seriously into talking about these teams that made so many free agent acquisitions. Would they play well together? And I think we're going to have that same conversation this year. If you remember last year, that team was the Atlanta Hawks. We did not know how to feel about them last season, and I think the Bulls are that interesting conversation to have this year.
Bulls are a 5 seed.
That's fair.
That team's fucking stacked.
As were the
that
Hawks.
Team's stacked. The team's stacked. Like, very low-key stacked. Like, Lonzo has dealt with your shit enough, people. Lonzo's sick of your shit, people. He's coming. He's here. He's about to fucking do this shit, you know? And there's that. There's Vooch, who, like, is an all-star, has been an all-star multiple times. Levine's an all-star. Patrick Williams, fucking, you know, ascending rookie.
they're going to make Coby White a backup, which I thought he was going to be a starter. And it's like, wow, that team's good, very good. We'll see. I'm excited. Oh, DeMar. I forgot about DeMar. That's how good the team is. I just forgot about him. See that? I mean, Jesus. You know? That's a hard team to beat. That's what's nice about being in Chicago and being on the Bulls. It's that you're playing on Jordan's team. You know, it's hard to pass up that kind of intrigue. I'm out of stuff to say, you guys. We'll see you next week. It's been a good show.